Blog Talk Radio.
Reverend Edward Pinckney, the only pastor in the history of mankind to ever be sent to prison for quoting the Bible. I tell you, I had a tremendous week this week. It was one that one would be happy and just to think about all the wonderful things that has happened this past week. I tell you, I have been on a roll. I've been going from city to city talking and just spreading the word about my dear friend, Whirlpool. Whirlpool have continued to punish the people here in Benton Harbor. But here's what they did that people need to understand Whirlpool. Whirlpool went out and spent about $50,000 to attempt to brainwash people. Matter of fact, I was there. I had to get up and leave because I was afraid that they might even brainwash me. That's how good it was. They served meals on Tuesday. Well, let me tell you what I did the whole week. Then I can get the Whirlpool. On Saturday, I went and had the meeting with the ministers around here. They called themselves the Minister Alliance. And I also gave them a little Willie Lynch to start it off, just to let them know I'm thinking about them. And see, before you can tell people about a solution, you got to identify the problem. Mm-hmm. So the problem was that they didn't quite understand that it was their duty to stand up for other people. They thought it was just okay for you to come to church, pay your tithes, hear a little rundown sermon, and go home and be happy. So I just gave them a little something to make them think about me for the rest of their life, probably. And but I left there with the impression that they was on board with me. Now, I could be wrong, but I was thinking that they was on board with me. I haven't received any calls telling me that Pinckney, we're with you 100%, anything like that. But it was a good week overall. Let me move on. Monday, I was in Detroit. Now, I was up there for the Martin Luther King celebration, which this is a big honor, going there and being able to be one of the keynote speakers there, because when you get all the elected officials there, they come here and sit on the front row, and that's what they do. But I tell you, it was so amazing because I didn't hold them up. I gave them something that they will be talking about for years. Matter of fact, every time I talk to someone from Detroit, they tell me about, they said, did you see it, that all these elected officials giving you a standing ovation? You, as much as they hate you, they gave you a standing ovation. I said, well, they didn't have no other choice.
Mm-hmm.
You see, when you're speaking truth to power understand truth. They may not do anything about it, but they understand truth. I tell you, it was a tremendous, celebration. Matter of fact, I would do it again next year. That's how much I enjoyed being in Detroit, given this, I don't know what I should call it, a lecture or what, but whatever it was, it was more than they anticipated. They didn't think that, you know, but they know me. They know the way I talk. You know, they know that power don't scare me. And they know I'm always going to give Whirlpool something. You see, it's my duty to give Whirlpool what they deserve because Whirlpool has the financial backing and also the political backing to do just about anything they want to do. So I had to go out there and do something for them. What I want to do more than anything else is tell the world about an international boycott of Whirlpool. And it appears to be something that, I mean, that people are already willing to do. So I'm one step on top of everything. But anyway, let me move on because I got to let my guest get in here and say something. But I want to get to Tuesday. I went up to Kalamazoo, did a speech up there, talked to some of the homeless people. You know, and they always be happy to see me. And I just told them what happened. I also gave Whirlpool a little bit something there, too. I always got to give Whirlpool something. That's what I do. If I don't throw out a shot to Whirlpool, I'm not being myself. You know, somebody, the first thing they say, well, Pinckney took a bribe. You know, so I got to give Whirlpool what they deserve. So I gave them a little something. Just let everybody know. Remember, don't buy Whirlpool products, whatever you do. I mean, even if it's on sale, don't get it. I said they're the only company in the United States that has a monopoly, and the governor's not saying nothing. Matter of fact, somebody, I don't know no company that owns 74% of anything when it comes to washer, dryers, and stoves and refrigerators. Whirlpool owns 74% of all the washer and dryers in the country, in the world, I should say, because it's international. So, but yet, nobody's saying nothing about it because U.S. Representative Upton is the heir to Whirlpool. So it's simple. But anyhow, on Tuesday when I gets back from Kalamazoo, I goes over to the college, and Whirlpool is having festivities. They got the film up on the wall trying to brainwash the poor people. First they feed them, then they give them information that Whirlpool is the best thing since bubblegum. Oh, yes, they gave them, and I had to leave because I was afraid that they was about to brainwash me because I kept smelling the food. So I had to get out of there. I said, Dorothy, let's go. I can't. It's almost 7 o'clock. Let's head home. I said, that food felt good. I said, what did he just say how wonderful Whirlpool was? So I said, well, look. But then here's the deal. I left there that night, and I came home, and I analyzed the whole situation. I said, what they're going doing is spending all this money to brainwash the people. The very next morning, we had a breakfast over there. Of course, you know, I went. And I went over there to sit with them. They had all the doctors, all the folks that, you know, they figured that, you know, all the folks with 10, 15 letters in front of their name and stuff like that. They had this group out there. And the first thing this group said, and it really got my attention, it said all the things that we have done for black folks. And you know I wasn't going to take that lightly. I said, young man, I said, what you're saying is that, let me make sure we understand exactly what you're trying to say here. You're saying that you have done a lot of stuff for black folks, and black folks just don't come out and receive it. I said, he was telling me some of the stuff they have done. I said, well, I didn't know that. And I said, if I don't know it, don't nobody else know it either. I said, you don't have a relationship with the people that live inside the city. You're doing stuff that you think they should have instead of asking the people what they want. Mm-hmm. Now this guy, he's angry now because I done hit a soul spot. He goes on to say, well, we trying to do so much for the black people here in Benton Harbor, and they're just not receiving it. And I said, well, here's the problem. Do you visit any black people? Do you know any black people? I mean, any. I don't care who they are. Do you know any? He said, I talk to so-and-so. I said, talk. Do you know them? That's what I want to know. So now they're all upset now because now they've got somebody in the room who's willing to speak up. Mm-hmm. So now they're saying, Reverend Pinckney, would you please sit down with us and talk more? At that stage, I gave them all my cards and left. I'll talk to y'all later because I think I got my plug in, and Whirlpool felt the punch. But the thing was that we have to understand exactly what we're doing. We're out here doing things. What they're trying to do, they're trying to buy and sell us. And Larry, you know, this is something that's important to all of us. We need to understand that if you don't stand for something, you'll fall for anything. And
right.
This is exactly what is happening in our community. They asked all the ministers. They had over 52 ministers there. You ain't had that many ministers together in your lifetime. You know, and the way they brought them together was food.
Mm-hmm.
You see, but we have to take a stand. See, we have to tell them that we're not going to take this crap from you no more. I can't be bought and I can't be sold. That should be the message that we distribute. We should tell everybody that we're not going to accept this. And Whirlpool, back up, because we're coming. Mm-hmm. It's just a matter of time, Larry, before we have Whirlpool just where we want them. I can see people coming from out of the woodwork right now saying, maybe what Pinkney been saying all this time is correct. You see, never before in the history of mankind have anybody just sat down and said what Pinkney was saying is correct. I'm talking about white folks.
Mm-hmm.
They saying this now. So, I must be on to something. But, Larry, I know that you and Ralph, you're there.
I'm here. I'm listening to every word.
My brother, Ralph, I'm glad to have you on. And I had promised to write this letter to Lynn. And I say I've been so busy. I promise you I'm going to get it out this week.
She will certainly understand. And even though Larry has given me permission to put the website of this radio program up on Lynn Stewart's website, I'm asking you permission right here and now. Let's go right to the heart of the matter. Do I have your permission to put this program up on Lynn Stewart's website?
You most certainly do. If Larry say that you got permission, it's
yes,
a done deal.
Yeah, okay.
See, Larry, it's a done. Look, hey Ralph,
mm-hmm.
we're triplets now.
Okay.
We're triplets.
I hear it. I love it. Okay.
Yeah, we're triplets now. Matter of fact, we're identical triplets. Let's put it that way.
Okay. I'm with you, and you'll be up on the website tomorrow. I always like to go. There would be no excuse for me not asking you personally, and I know that Larry gave me permission. I said, what do you think? And he says, do it.
Yeah.
I'm taking this opportunity now to get on the Whirlpool.
Yes.
I said one of the things that we must do is act presidential, and that is to speak in the language of our presidents.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And one of the things that our presidents say, economic sanctions. We're going to have economic sanctions. And I want everybody to remember, Whirlpool under any other name is still Whirlpool.
That's right.
And I think that when we say we're going to have economic sanctions, we have to ask, when we're buying a brand that they have cheapened by leaving some part out that Whirlpool made and it's not their brand name, we have to ask that. And most of the time, people will tell you because the salesman will tell you because they love the idea that this is really a Whirlpool.
Yeah.
Under another name.
Mm-hmm.
We have to ask that. Is this made by Whirlpool? Is Sears and Roebuck selling it under their brand, made by Whirlpool? And you don't get as much as that as we used to, but there's still a lot of it. And when they say it's by Whirlpool, we have to say, well, excuse me, show me something else.
That's right. Absolutely.
Acting
absolutely.
Presidential. And I want to talk in later programs about saying things that the presidents of our country say, that for this country representing for this country, we must represent ourselves and act in a presidential manner.
Absolutely.
And say, no, we're not buying that product. And in this day and age, it doesn't take nearly as many of us with a conscience because the profits are way down. And if there's some of us with conscience to say, no, we're not buying that, we can make these people sit down at the table and talk to us.
Oh, absolutely.
And thank you for bringing this issue to us. And I'm going to let that go for a minute. Go, Larry.
Larry.
I'm here.
Well, go for what you know.
Well, I just, obviously, it's crystal clear that I call Whirlpool what it is. It's an apartheid company, as
absolutely.
In apartheid in South Africa, apartheid with the Palestinian people. It's apartheid. It's economic apartheid against black and poor people, and we just need to be blunt about that. No beating around the bush, no being shy. The fact is they're just pimping us. They're using us, they're blood-sucking us, and then to have the unmitigated audacity to turn around and saying they're doing something for black people. We don't need them to do nothing for black people. We can do for ourselves. You know, remember the song that James Brown used to say?
Mm-hmm.
Soaking up the door.
That's
I go
right.
do it myself.
That's
and,
right.
And that's what this has to be about. So I listened closely, Reverend Pinkney, when you were talking about this youngster you were talking representing Whirlpool.
Mm-hmm.
And you know, we need to make it crystal clear to Whirlpool, and to all these other blood-sucking corporations, whether it be Blackwater or any other corporation, we need to make it crystal clear that we have taken the sheet off of them. We now know, you know, who and what they really are, and we're going to call them on it. We're going to call them on it. It's just got to stop. It's got to be exposed, and that includes exposing all those enablers, whether it's Barack Obama, whether it's Eric Holder, whether it's Seth, well, it doesn't matter. The point is we expose the enablers, whether it's this chunk, Upton, U.S. Congress member, I should call him an anti-people member.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, because that's what he is. He's anti-people. He's first and foremost black people, and he's anti-oppressed people,
mm-hmm.
economically disenfranchised and oppressed people. And we need to just, come on now, let's just pull the sheet on off, get on out from under it, and tell them and show them, show the people and show the corporations that we know what they are about, and we're not going to stand for it. We're just not going to stand for it anymore.
But I love that, and I know you have always come up with the proper word for that.
Mm-hmm.
But let's do a little history. You know, here we are in an economic downturn. They call it an economic downturn. It's a depression. But they like to use their words. Call it whatever you may. But and even though it weakens and hurts us, it puts us in position of power. There are fewer dollars out there. We are 20% of the spending thing,
mm-hmm.
and we have been we have victimized ourselves by having a high number of people of our people buying brand names.
Mm-hmm.
We're big on brand names. We spend a lot of money out there, and every time we talk about how bad America is, somebody says, "Well, you people have X number of dollars to spend." Well, it's about time we begin using those X number of dollars we have to spend properly.
Absolutely.
And I say economic sanctions. And as Larry was saying, there are many people among us who are supposed to represent us who really represent the enemy. And I remember with these economic sanctions when Jesse Jackson was out there, and I'm not sorry that I offend people. I merely tell the truth.
That's right. You're in the truth telling. That's what you're doing.
So Jesse was out there talking about how bad Mitsubishi was and how good General Motors was.
Mm-hmm.
Now, and this fits in with, you know, the information or disinformation revolution we are in. We are in a so-called information revolution. We have cell phones, bell phones, all kind of phones, all kind of things. 24/7, we get disinformation into our heads. And this is, you know, I can't imagine it getting any worse. Well, we get so many lies shot at us day and night. But back in the day, it was in the 70s and 80s, when Jesse Jackson was working for General Motors,
mm-hmm.
and a young man carried a lawsuit against General Motors. He bought a dealership. Now, we all know the history of dealerships in America. We don't get them.
No.
So he bought the dealership, but along with this dealership, he had to buy the dealer's house. He had to take on all of the old debt of the previous dealer. And the young man bought it because he knew this was his only shot. So now he sues General Motors for what, you know, what they had forced him to do, but he bought the dealership and accepted all of that. And in enter Jesse Jackson, who with a campaign for General Motors, and he calls up the young man, and he had hired young attorneys who had learned enough disrespect for the law to be on the edge. So what they did was recorded the conversation so that no one could argue with them.
Mm-hmm.
So he says, "I got a deal for you. Drop your lawsuit against General Motors, and I'm going to get you more than what your lawyers are getting you, but you have to get rid of these young lawyers, et cetera." Well, the young lawyers got more than Jesse Jackson had promised, who had been given the right from General Motors to promise this young man to drop his lawsuit. He refused to drop the lawsuit. Jesse was attacking Mitsubishi for not having black dealers, and they had more black dealers than General Motors.
Mm.
So this is the disinformation that's out there. People do not have the correct information. These people are in charge of it. So we must be very careful, and we must use, and I thank you, Reverend Pinckney, for giving us this opportunity to put out correct information, because we're getting disinformation all day, every day.
Absolutely.
And on Whirlpool, we must say, under any other name, we're not buying it. We're not interested in buying it under the name.
KitchenAid or whatever it might be.
Whatever, KitchenAid, whatever they're doing. It's not KitchenAid. But I know Sears has a lot of stuff out there that's made by Whirlpool that's not under the Whirlpool name. It's under their own name brand.
Mm-hmm.
And we ask this simple question, and we must always be aware of the mass disinformation that's out there every day. And this thing on Haiti will almost makes me cry when I see the stuff. People have no idea of American role in Haiti. And I'm so thankful for the program you had last week when we all got a history lesson of what that's all about, keeping people on their knees so if a wind comes by, never mind an earthquake, if a wind comes by, they are destabilized. And the fact that a Cuban hospital was on the ground in 2 days,
yes. This
type of information has to be out there, because one of the things that I've said, that how can you expect a people to act correctly when they don't have the correct information?
Absolutely.
And one of the objectives of this oppressive society that they have been able to achieve is to keep our people from hearing the truth. And when I sit and I think of your program every week of telling the truth, having somebody on to talk the truth, I think that all of your listeners must be aware of, and this is Ralph speaking. I say, I don't believe anything I see there.
Mm-hmm.
If the government says it, it's a lie.
That's right. Yeah, I agree with you.
And that's what we need to really understand. I mean, we need to move people to exactly what you said, Ralph, and that is the fact that we need to understand that if the government says it, right away we should know it is a lie. We need to understand that. It's the 21st century. By now we should understand that. If the corporations say it, it is a lie. When you mention Haiti, for example, the fact is that the U.S. has sent not aid, but troops. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
That's what the emphasis is. The emphasis is sending troops to control, to occupy. It's like Iraq, to occupy. Okay, and who does Barack Obama put in charge? Why, he puts George the Butcher Bush and Bill the Sleeve Clinton in charge of what? Destabilizing, oppressing the people of Haiti. Meanwhile, you get all this disinformation from ABC, CBS, CNN, and PBS, all of them, because they are in cahoots, okay, telling you about how wonderful, okay, the U.S. is. Well, all we have to do is look at this country itself. It was so wonderful. How come we are in the dire straits, everyday people? I have to be.
Here's the thing about that, too. Remember this. Now what you're going to have a United States governor occupying the country of Haiti, probably
exactly.
For the next 10, 15 years.
Exactly.
And what you're going to do, they're going to do everything they can to make sure that the people there never rise up again.
That's right.
And that's
what it's about.
Right. I mean, that's all it is. But you talking about some people who's willing to die for their country, you see? And they know they're going to have to figure out a way how they're going to neutralize these Haitians.
Mm-hmm.
And put them, like I said, they're on their knees right now. But they know how to get up.
Yes, they do.
You can ask the French about that. They know how to get up.
Well, Larry, I have, and Reverend, I have a question here. I want a young investigative reporter to find out, to investigate how much Bill Clinton and George Bush are making for their services in charge of this Haitian Relief Fund. Now that they're in charge of bringing in funds, et cetera, and you know that when they make a speech, they get money that we talk about would take us 5 years to earn.
Oh, absolutely.
So I'm saying, now, and it just struck me, and I smiled. I says, why even put these guys' names in it? Why would you do something?
Especially Bush.
And it's
Bush, Katrina.
It's something in it for them. And so I wanted to hear next week some young reporter calling in. I checked it out, and I'm going to see. Because according to law, the Haitian people only need to get, or any recipient of a tax-deductible fund, the law is that the people must get 10% of that. Mm-hmm. So where does this other 90% go? People have to understand that, and people have to start asking questions. Send your money to the Red Cross is what's been said. I disagree with that 10,000%. This is the most outrageous thing I saw on the news, because the history of the Red Cross going all the way back to World War II in terms of our troops who were there in the European theater, what did the Red Cross do? Man, we were nothing. We were not to be considered. You couldn't get a donut or a cup of coffee from them. Our boy.
Yeah, and for that matter, the Red Cross, I mean, I totally agree. The Red Cross, we don't even have to go back to World War II. Hell, just go back to Katrina. Go back
That's
to
it.
New Orleans.
Right. What I'm saying is, yes, go back there, but I'm saying this was nothing new then.
No.
History, and because of disinformation, we don't know, but I'm surprised to see they're still doing this. So, like I said, I'm putting out a call to some investigative reporter to say, hey, yeah, they put Bush and Clinton in there, and they're walking home with $1 million or $1.5 million for signing their name onto this relief fund, and you're paying their salaries before you're taking care of the Haitian people. And I was just talking to Larry this morning about disinformation. Here we are in New York, and all over the New York media is this group of workers, emergency workers who had equipment and power jacks and the jars of life, you know, that can pry things open and move things. They were in Haiti for a week. I believe it was 30 of them. Mm-hmm. And they had support. They had food, housing, water, facilities. And when I looked and it showed them welcome home with their black uniforms and yellow striped butchers' names and their helmets and welcome home. And then there was a fact. They were there a week with all the support, and they saved six people. Now, I don't want to minimize the lives of six people, but if they had and I says, now, what is this about? How much did it cost them to fly these people and all their support to Haiti for a week? If they had spent that money with Haitian people doing their own rescue work, they undoubtedly would have saved more than six people.
Absolutely.
Days, all this support, six people, what is this about? This is about a publicity stunt.
Right. Absolutely.
Right.
Absolutely.
Publicity stunt on the backs of the people of Haiti. Oh, you see what we're doing for them? No, you're wasting money, time, et cetera. The Cubans had a hospital operating in 2 days, and a week later, we're still not getting water there because we're busy with publicity stunts.
Ralph, remember this, too. See, people here, these folks, they've been doing people so bad here. This is also designed to make them feel better about themselves.
Oh, yes. Yes.
You see what I'm saying? This makes them feel, you see what we're doing for these Haitians? Oh, it's so terrible over there. I'm going to send them $50. I'm going to send them $100. We're going to raise $1,000. We're going to raise $1 million. See, what they say, all the bad things they have done in their life, now you can erase it in their minds, now only in their mind, that you can erase all the bad things we have done to black people and other people, and we're going to send them $50, and that's going to erase everything.
Well, you've opened up a whole panoply. Yeah, a whole, I don't even want to say the word, of this psychology, what's happening here in America. That's be careful. We'll be here till midnight next week.
I know that's right.
Discussing that. But the interesting thing is that we have been, back to the theme, we have been, have gotten written on so much with disinformation, we don't know up from down. And I started off by naming names of the enemy within us. And I mentioned Jesse Jackson.
Mm-hmm.
I need not add our latest president, the things he's done. And it's going to hurt the people of Haiti. But I always say this. Katrina, we're talking about Haiti. But I say to people, don't keep that in your mind. But remember, he's hurting us.
That's right.
Absolutely.
As we did.
First of all, here we are. We have become irrelevant because the moment he's there, he made this foolish statement, it's 90% solved. Racism is 90% solved. So now that takes us, we don't have an argument. Politically speaking, he says he doesn't want reparations. Not for his
right, right. You should clarify for the audience who you're talking about. We know this.
President
but say
Obama.
It, no. Obama.
Oh, yeah.
Barack Obama.
You're right. I should clarify that. And one of the things, as soon as he said that, I said, you know, I'm going to start an organization. And this organization is, I'm going to get a list of all of the people who say they don't want reparations, and I want them to sign up that they're off the list. Don't bother me.
Yeah.
And I don't want it. So then maybe when this list gets big enough, those of us who understand the importance of it may get it.
Mm-hmm.
But I suspect that when I ask Mr. Obama to sign his name on the list that he doesn't get it, he's going to refuse, even though he's made enough money. Because remember, the corporations gave him more money than they gave Hillary Clinton.
Mm-hmm.
And somebody will have to correct me. I want some investigative reporter to tell me. I believe he got $25 million more than Hillary. And I think he has money left over from his campaign.
Millions of dollars left over from the campaign.
Health
yeah.
companies. And then people still think we're going to get a health plan from the guy who was paid to keep us from getting a health plan.
Right.
You know, that
right.
to me is a psychology that I'd like you or Larry and Reverend Pink need to discuss. What is the psychology of a people that reality can be suspended?
And that's exactly,
here we are.
That's exactly what it is, Ralph, when you talk about it. Even that situation in, that was rigged too. They ran the wrong person. They knew that she was going to lose.
Mm-hmm.
Absolutely. You know, they knew from the start that this woman, even though this is a Democratic, Massachusetts is a Democratic state, they knew that this person was going to get her butt whooped, and she got spanked. It wasn't even close. They said she didn't even get out and campaign.
Well, here's the other interesting thing about that, is that, you know, you look at the whole advent of Obama and his becoming president, and then you see he has this health plan. 75% of Americans want single-payer health. Now, we could argue, we'll say 65 to 75% want single-payer. Well, that's a winner in any book I know.
Yes,
and
absolutely.
Yet, we have Nancy Pelosi, we have Obama who promised it, the Democratic Party who promised it, and now they reneged on their promise. So what we have now, as I said to a friend of mine, do you know they have given the right wing the stick to beat them with?
Mm-hmm.
They don't give it. The right wing doesn't give a damn about health.
No.
Because the right wing is run by the very corporations that are keeping us from getting decent health care.
Absolutely.
Go ahead, brother.
Well, this is what I'm saying. Now, you know the corporations now, think about these. They're going to draw up the plan for you to vote on, for the Senate to vote on anyway, and then they don't like it either because they don't want you to have this. If they did pass it, these insurance companies will make a mint. They will be filthy,
guaranteed
rich.
Ever to make a mint.
Right. This is, I mean, either way it goes, they win. It's a win-win situation for them. If they get that health care program passed, it's a winner for them. If they don't get it passed, it's still a winner for them.
because they
and
have,
it's a lose-lose situation for the people.
For the people.
That's what we need to understand. It
right.
is a lose-lose situation for everyday people. It's not about merely the Democrats and Republicans, because they're nothing but Republicrats anyway. They
absolutely.
They are owned lock, stock, and barrel by the same corporations. So I call it political ping-pong.
Mm-hmm.
What they're doing, and Obama is doing this. He knows full well what he's doing. The man is not stupid. He may be vicious and vile and Grima Wormtongue, as I call him, but he's not.
Not again, Larry.
He's no fool. Grima Wormtongue, that character in Tolkien's writing, this Wormtongue was the guy who could just mesmerize people to sleep, and that's why they got Obama there. But my point is that Obama knows that if the people become fed up with the Democrat so-called, and I say so-called, Democratic Party, they have no option but to do what? To turn to the Republicans, who are the same thing. In
absolutely.
Fact, as Malcolm said, you got the foxes and the wolves, and the Democrats
mm-hmm.
are the foxes, and the Republicans are the yep. wolves, and guess what they both do? They eat you.
That's right.
They eat you. And,
that's
and
right.
what we need to do is say no to both of them, the foxes and the wolves, and we need to be really upfront about this, and we need to start organizing outside of this prison, because that's all it is. It's a prison of the Republicrats, Democrats and Republicans.
Well, I think Chavez, when he came from Venezuela, said it right when he said the dictatorship of the two-party system, you know, like, and the nerve of Charlie Rangel, who sold out Adam Clayton Powell, and one day we'll get into that story
mm-hmm.
of the church that he was there, and into details and naming names of how they sold out Adam Clayton Powell and Harlem.
Mm-hmm.
How they sold out Harlem.
While we're on this and we talk about these corporations, tell me a little bit about Harlem. They tell me now that it's about 60% Caucasian now. Is that correct?
You're correct. And the interesting mm-hmm. thing is about Harlem. I was there the other night, and I says, you know, it is very interesting. I got started organizing in Harlem in 1962.
Mm-hmm.
And around, I believe it was around 1968, riding on a bus with Queen Mother Moore. We have so much, maybe we're going to have to sit down and list topics that we have to discuss.
Mm-hmm.
And so much is coming at us fast and furious that we have no opportunity to pick and choose. We have to talk about what's happening in Haiti today. We have to talk about the mortgage, you know, like the subprime mortgages. We have to talk about Whirlpool. So we have little room to play, but if we could figure out some way that we could discuss, bring history in about how we got to where we are. And I remember now I'm back to 1968 riding on a bus with Queen Mother Moore. We on the left are always in trouble.
52.
We don't have money. We're either in jail. We lost a job, et cetera, because of what we've done. I was an ex-teacher who had lost a job. My car broke down, but I took responsibility for getting Queen Mother Moore, who was a teacher of Malcolm X and so many other people, you know, political education. I took responsibility to getting her home, and I'm in New York, and we had a New York meeting. My car broke down. My old car gave up the ghost, so I had to take her home on the bus, and I'm going to make sure she gets home in the Bronx. So we're taking a bus across 125th Street, and Queen Mother looked at me, and I'm looking out the window, and she says, "Look very closely." And I'm saying, "Well, what should I be observing?" And she says, "Observe what you will never see again."
Mm.
This was 1968, and I says, "What do you mean by that?" And she says, "You're seeing this Harlem for the last time. It's going to be gone." Now, I considered myself a pretty bright young man in 1968. I could not conceive of Harlem not being there. Well, I can drive down 125th Street today.
Mm-hmm.
It's gone. It's history.
It's gone.
For jobs, we were fighting for rent, we were fighting for places. Forget about that. We lost all of those fights. It is gone. They closed up buildings. They emptied it out. You have blocks, empty blocks And what they did is they put it up to real estate brokers to redevelop it, and ain't nobody who looks like you or me able to afford that.
That's right.
And
well, let me interject something. And one of the people who were most responsible for that, one of the people, that's why I call him Bill the Sleeve Clinton, okay? Bill Clinton himself was directly involved in what I call the gentrification, i.e. apartheid, taking Harlem away from blacks because, Clinton actually has a place in Harlem.
Oh, yeah.
Right?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
Okay.
Name. You have to name names. You have to have the name. You know, we have to put Charlie Rangel. You know, we have to put him in there. Is an instrument of our own destruction, and we
absolutely.
Al Sharpton is a part of that. These people, you know, like they sold it, and then we have to add in. I'm sorry, Reverend Pinckney, the ministers, they played such an outrageous role because
and they're still playing.
They're still okay. Yeah. Thank you. I was getting a little nervous about what I was going to say here.
No, you go right ahead. Look, we speaking truth. So, whatever you say, let the truth be.
Okay,
right.
The churches, they felt when they were disassembling Harlem, they had to have the ministers in it to give it some, legality, to give it some semblance of justice. So they said, we're putting this in the hands of the ministers. What really happened is the ministers merely signed their names, and I assume they got their pieces of gold, and the same people who administered the stuff continued ministering. Now, I'm a victim, and I'm one who can point, listen to this, I can point to $11,000 I lost in buying a home in Harlem.
Mm.
So I figured, well, this is historic. This is our community. So, hey, they put money down on homes. Hey, here's my money. So put down money on homes, and what happened was the bank, Citibank, who had financed the construction, looked at the construction of the building that I had put money down on and said, you know, this construction is subpar, so we just won't finance this place.
Mm.
So I says, well, okay, put my name down on another place. Let me find another place that I like. I looked at the second place, and I says, okay, I'll take this place. And they says, give us $11,000 more. And my answer was, what happened to the first $11,000?
We spent it.
No, they didn't say that. They said, never mind that first $11,000. Give us another $11,000. And so that's when I dug my heels in.
Mm-hmm.
I'm saying, wait a minute. You know, I gave HUDC, Harlem Urban Development Corporation, $11,000 on as down payment on a place they couldn't produce, so now they're going to give me another place. But what happened was they closed. If you remember, Harlem Urban Development Corporation was changed. The government changed it and says, no, these people are so corrupt, they're so bad, we're putting them out of business. We're going to have just the Urban Development Corporation. We're going
another corrupt company.
So I said, oh, whatever you call it, it's okay by me. You have my $11,000. Just reapply it. And they said, no. So what do? I run to a lawyer. First lawyer I run to is a young woman I knew, Joan Charles, went to it. And she's messing around with it. I'm saying, when do I get to court? So then I take a proactive, I go to court, and they say, your name ain't even on the list.
Yeah.
So I'm saying, now we have to be aware, aware. Somebody I know, somebody who looks like me, I trusted.
Mm.
No trust. You got. Don't do that. I'm the one who will tell you, don't do that. Your friend is a person who is friend to you. So then I go to another lawyer. And the other lawyer sits me down and looks at it, and he makes a phone call to our triumvirate. Percy Sutton just died, and we're crying about Percy. Well, he saved the Harlem Theater, and I remind people, Apollo Theater, I remind people he saved it three times with government money.
Wow.
What happened to the government money two times?
Mm.
You see what I'm saying? We have to be very careful and analytical about who the people are we support. They can look like us. They played the game. They ain't us. And see, I'm saying so much here. Anyway, I go back to Jess Greenup, a part of his thing when the savings and loan thing happened, and people wanted to investigate that, and so many people, the Urban League, the NAACP, they lost money because somebody suggested they should put all of their money into one corporation, and then when the collapse came, each corporation could only claim like $500,000.
Mm.
And I says, and the first thing that came to my mind was, whose idea was that?
Yeah.
Put it into one umbrella organization, and then so instead of 10 different organizations collecting $500,000 or whatever number it was, we only had one organization. Now, I'm not a financial expert. I'm not even an expert on anything but politics.
Mm-hmm.
But whose idea was that, and what is the timing? I'm suspicious. And the same names come up. So now this was so bad that even the federal government had to say, listen, we have to do something. So they says, you know, the lawyer who was in charge of this, Jess Greenup, you know, he has to be removed. So I says, well, that's something. The government is doing something. Guess who got the job? The firm that got the job to continue under Urban Development Corporation, his son. So what did they do? They just took Senior out and put Junior in. Business as usual. We're still getting ripped off.
And what they did was just reconstructed everything, huh?
They just changed the paper.
Uh-huh. Just changed the title, make sure things go as they were. I tell you, this is, you know what, that it reminds me of living here in Benton Harbor. It's the same situation.
Sorry.
Yeah, it's the same situation in Harlem that's happening here. They're taking, like, all the lakefront land. It no longer belongs to the residents here in Benton Harbor. Now they're trying to knock down the high school. The high school sits on the lake.
Uh-huh.
And what they want that high school. They want to move it all the way out into the township where all that contaminated land is. And it's the same stuff that was happening in Harlem. In Harlem, they just want to move everybody out. I was in Harlem, and one of the things that I did notice that, you know, it was 99.9% black.
Mm-hmm.
And I said that was amazing. But it's the same way Benton Harbor is. It was in the high 90s. Now it's getting, you know, if we got 92% African American now, you know, I would say it's even less than that.
I would like, you know, we're talking history. I'd like to raise a question and ask you two gentlemen to comment on this. I don't know if gentleman is the correct word. Back in the 60s, you remember Elijah Muhammad was saying we have to have five states in the South or four states in the South.
Mm-hmm.
It was a demand on government.
Our position
was that those are the community control struggle was that we have the most valuable land in the country. We are we are the majority in the inner cities. Never mind five states in the South. And I said publicly, I would never tell people to do that. I says, if we have all of us are in five states in the South,
mm-hmm.
we'd bomb on us and we'd be finished. Let's stay where we are and control the land that we occupy. Center City America. This is the land.
Yeah, well, we are engaged in. And we might as well be candid, broad about it. We are engaged in essentially an economic and political guerrilla warfare in this
mm-hmm.
country. Okay? So that means wherever we are, we don't give up that territory. Remember, they put us there to begin with, all right? And in the case of Harlem, or in the case of in New York, or whether it's Detroit, whether it's Benton Harbor, whether it's a certain part of San Francisco. It's the same thing. We must conduct and understand that we are conducting economic and political guerrilla warfare for our very survival. So I think that your point is very well taken and very well made, Brother Ralph, because we have to stand our ground. And just like Reverend Pinckney was saying, what they're doing in Benton Harbor, with the help, of course, of Whirlpool Corporation and a bunch of sellout Negroidians, you know, they're doing the same thing. But this is not unique to Benton Harbor. It is not unique to Harlem. It is not unique.
The point I'm making is I hope we haven't lost the struggle other places. It's lost in Lower East Side. People thought, you see, once you get somebody's mind, it's very easy. If they don't understand, if they have disinformation, they were paying people to move out of the Lower East Side before they gentrified. And people were taking paltry sums like $700. And I'm saying, don't you understand? No, they didn't understand.
No.
People in Harlem, no, they don't understand. No, it is not only Harlem, Los Angeles, Pittsburgh. They have taken Center City, and because of our mindset, hey,
absolutely.
This is bad.
Hey, Ralph, I got Libby, you there?
I'm here, and I have something to read.
Oh, okay.
I'll shut up.
Just for a moment. Go ahead.
Yeah, this is a short one. This is on a website, which you can all go to, bhbanco.org, and that's B as in Benton, H as in Harbor, BANCO.org, bhbanco.org. And this was... I think this is the one that Reverend Kinkney would like me to read. Is it federal judge dismisses lawsuit over Gene Clark Park?
That is perfect.
Yeah. Okay. This actually came out of the MichiganMessenger.com, an online news service written by Eartha Jane Melzer. Federal judge dismisses lawsuit over Gene Clark Park. This is just jaw-dropping. Okay. A federal judge in Grand Rapids has dismissed a lawsuit that claimed the National Park Service and Army Corps of Engineers failed to follow environmental laws when they allowed Benton Harbor's Gene Clark Park to be developed as a private Jack Nicklaus signature golf course.
Oh,
opponents... Opponents of the conversion of the public park say that a critical concern is the trade of majestic dune views in a globally rare ecosystem along Lake Michigan for 38 acres of environmentally contaminated former industrial land. And the attorney for the plaintiffs is Terry Lodge, and he said, "We're taking an appeal because there were several major factual errors and legal flaws in the ruling, which, if left unchallenged, open local and state parks across the country to privatization just because a powerful entity has a plan to profit from the public's legacy." Just to interrupt briefly the article, Gene Clark Park was deeded to the public in 1913 by a man named John Clark.
You mean deeded to the city of Benton Harbor?
Yeah, sorry about that. Yep, people of Benton Harbor.
Mm-hmm.
Going on to finish, Cornerstone Alliance, by the way, Cornerstone Alliance is just the real estate arm of Whirlpool.
Mm.
Cornerstone Alliance president Wendy Dant Chesser told WSJM that last week's ruling validates years of hard work on the part of Harbor Shores developers. A separate case remains pending in the State Court of Appeals. Plaintiffs in that case claim that the privatization of the park violates the terms of the deed that granted it to the public, as well as a 2004 consent judgment in which the city of Benton Harbor agreed to preserve the park for public use. So you can read that again at bhbanco.org.
Well, here's what that's all about. It's just the hostile takeover of the city of Benton Harbor by Whirlpool and all their cronies. What they have done, all the lakefront land. We had a beautiful, beautiful beach here in the city of Benton Harbor. What Whirlpool did, they came and dumped tons and tons of garbage on it and had the news media come out and take a picture of it and claim that people were dumping garbage on it. Earlier that morning, they had the dump truck dumping the garbage on the beach. It was done, Whirlpool and their gang and Cornerstone Alliance was behind it. Now, here's another thing they did. They set the dunes on fire and got caught. So, you know, they're willing to do anything. And just like in Harlem, Detroit, or any place else, these corporations with all their money and people like Whirlpool, they would do anything to take from us. That's why we have to pull this thing together. We have to unify not only among ourselves, but all across the country.
All right. Across the world.
Well, that's right.
Okay, you see, the interesting thing I noticed about, you know, this war that's going on, let us not misunderstand. There's a war of the rich
mm-hmm.
and the poor. It has always gone on. And somebody said something to me, Ralph, what are you trying to do, start the class war? And I says, my friend, the war was here before I was born, before you were born, before any of us who were alive was born. It is there, and it continues. And what they are doing and what they have done throughout the world is they are allowing money crosses over borders,
mm-hmm.
you know, like unimpeded, but
mm-hmm.
then they stop people from crossing borders unimpeded. This is where we have the problem with the immigration issue. People cannot travel, money can. Guess who's going to win? The people who can travel. They are making the whole world a third world, meaning that the rich are super rich, and the poor are super poor. The super poor working, struggling to avoid the penalty of being poor. And don't misunderstand this. If you're poor in a capitalist nation, that is a penalty.
Mm-hmm.
You are. That is a punishment. So what we all are struggling to do is avoid poverty. And we involve ourselves in this capitalistic, imperialist, what I call a euphemism for...
Can I ask a question?
Yes.
I'm sorry to interrupt. I know the time
interrupt.
Is short.
Interrupt.
It's two things, actually. And it's all related, you know. I just wanted to put out a word to people to go to Black Commentator and read Larry Pinkney's Obama's Change, quote-unquote, from the frying pan into the fire. It's this week's article. It's really good.
Excellent.
Thank you.
Very well stated. Proper interrupt.
That's a Black Commentator. And also, I wondered, Reverend.
No, I want people to hear
the
say
photograph. The photograph that they took, they took of the garbage. Did they print that in the company paper, the Herald Palladium?
Repeat that again.
Did they print that paper of the garbage? Did they print it in the Herald Palladium?
Oh, absolutely.
Do you have a copy?
Do I have a copy? I'm pretty sure I got a copy of it in my files. And also, I can give you the date where we can look it up in the Herald Palladium. We can pull it up. Because
I don't know how to do that because they don't
okay.
let you go back.
Well,
I'll
Xerox. I'll make a copy of it, and I'll get you a copy of it. I'll
Thank
scan
you.
It and see can I get it to you.
Thank you.
Yeah, I can do that. But it's important because for some reason that was the same day that Jack Nicklaus came here, and he saw all the garbage on the beach.
Well, that is really important.
Yeah, that's crucial. Matter of fact, it was so important that I'm thinking that they ran it for 2-3 days, the Herald Palladium, because that's what they do. See, actually, the Herald Palladium actually works for Whirlpool.
Right. Can you please repeat what you said, the article that we must all read? Hello?
Repeat that again.
Repeat the article.
The article is the Herald Palladium where they stacked up all the garbage on the beach. That was the same day that Jack Nicklaus came here to review the planning of the golf course on our beach. I don't know
the article that we must read by Larry Pinkney.
Okay, that's blackcommentator.com, and it's called Obama's Change from the Frying Pan into the Fire.
Beautiful, beautiful. And listen, we got about 60 seconds left. Larry, come on, since this is your article, let's talk. You have the last say here. Go right ahead.
Well, I just thank you, Libby, for mentioning that, and I would just urge everyone to go to www.blackcommentator. The article speaks for itself, Obama's Change, okay, from the frying pan into the fire. Let's remember that just last week, the U.S. Supreme Court made a ruling taking all constraints from corporations who can now blatantly buy politicians blatantly as far as their campaign funds. We live in a corporate fascist state. Let's understand it, and we got to fight it.
That's right. And it's getting worse. That's the thing is.
Yeah.
Corporations are taking over everything unless the people stand up. Ralph,
I am so humbled to be able to participate in this information giving, this correct information, this fighting against disinformation revolution that we are involved in. Thank you so much for allowing me to have a moment to add, I hope, a little something.
Amen. And Libby, you got about 10 seconds.
I believe what's happening in Haiti is a brutal occupation rather than actual help for people in distress. Am I right?
You are right.
Yeah,
you're 100% correct. Amen. And that is it. We we ran out of time. But I tell you, we had a beautiful show. And Ralph, Larry,
yeah,
we're triplets. Okay? We're connected. We're connected. You know, and just remember that. We're connected.
I'm with you.
Hey, and whatever good for the cause, it's definitely good, and you have my permission. If Larry said that something can happen, let it happen.
It'll be up on the website tomorrow morning.
Okay, well, I'm looking forward to seeing it.
Great.
Love you all, man. Love
all
you
right,
all.
Take care, everybody.
And
love
Libby,
you, love
are you,
love
there?
You. And thank you, Libby.
Yep.
Yeah, thanks, Libby.
And let me throw a little shout out to Dorothy. Dorothy, keep up the good work, but just don't ring that doorbell. I'll see you later. God bless y'all.
All right. Good night.
Bye-bye.
Yeah.